From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of January, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Hollister, Missouri. And Drew Lerner will be here today to discuss the weather forecast in Argentina as well as Brazil. Take each of those up in some depth on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at $6.27, up 7 cents. The May 6.5 higher at $6.25, and December futures at $5.72¾, 3 higher. March soybeans were up 32¾, finished at $14.40. The May contract at $14.47, up 31. In November, up 15½, new crop settled $13.34. The bean meal futures at $400.50, up $8.50. And the bean oil at $63.93, $1.42 higher. Wheat futures were down 23 cents, finished at $7.95 for the soft red March. The hard red March, 18¾ lower at $8.15¾. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $141.90, $1.80 higher. Feeders at $160.80, up 95 cents for 100 pounds, and lean hogs at $96.45, down 80 cents on the afternoon. Crude oil about $1.72 a barrel higher. A diesel fuel up 6½ cents, and gasoline on the wholesale price for the RBOB at $2.52¼. That's up a nickel and 0.8 cents per gallon. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing now joins us from Hollister, Missouri at TotalFarmMarketing.com. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Todd.
Let's start with the support and resistance levels. I don't know whether, have they changed in the last week for soybeans?
Well, they've changed quite a bit, yes. There's no question about that. When we look at corn, we've got March at 571 support, 635 resistance. May 621 and 643, and July 574 and 656. Beans, March 1407 and 1667. May 1410 and 1593, and July 1375 and 1507. We look at April gold, 1756 support, 1892 resistance. Dow Jones, 32,811 support, 36,953 is resistance. U.S. dollar, 95.62 is support, 97.35 is resistance. And, you know, I've talked about Bitcoin ever since it really started going crazy, right? February Bitcoin, support, 33,207, resistance at 41,856. We roll back to November, and Bitcoin was at 70,000 in February. So for all of you who are really interested in Bitcoin out there, just be prepared to take a wild ride. It'll be worse than going to Great America, because it's really quite volatile is what it is. Managed money, this is interesting. They're now long 9,000 of the soft red wheat. Last week they were short 17,000. Corn long 357, last week long 351. Soybeans 122,000 long, 94,000 last week. Soy meal 75,000 long, 66,000 last week. And soy oil 77,000 long compared to 62,000 last week. So we can certainly see that managed money has stepped up and have gotten back into their long positions, even longer than they had been in the meal and the oil, and that's primarily because of South America. And wheat has picked up primarily because of the Russian-Ukraine situation. Okay, so it's kind of interesting stuff going on out there. Export inspections, wheat exports down are running 18% behind compared to 18 last week. We need to average 15.1 million bushels to reach the USDA. Corn is 13% behind compared to 13 last week, and we need to do 51 million. And soybeans 24% behind compared to 23% last week, and there we need to average 23.1 million to reach the USDA expectations. So, you know, we're still early on in the marketing year. Anything's possible. Let's just put it that way.
Hey, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about Bitcoin, just a bit, and the commodity markets as it's related to Ukraine and Russia. Bitcoin, of course, was legalized as a currency of sorts, if I remember correctly, in November in Ukraine. So that's part of the reason it's fallen so sharply down, what, 50% or so. But the commodity markets in general have had to consider what the Ukraine-Russia issue impact will be over time, and how it impacts flow out of the Black Sea area. Can you give me kind of your assessment at this point?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very interesting, and I think this is really, I'm glad that you ask about that, because this is something that our clients have to recognize. You know, the Russia-Ukraine issue has been driving wheat higher. There's no question about that. But it's like a he said, she said. We got 100,000 troops going there, right? But the Ukraine says everything's okay. It's not going to be a problem. So today, what do we have? Wheat down 20 plus. And so it just shows you how volatile the situation is. Now, when we saw the Russia-Crimea conflict, Russia waited until after the Olympics to make any type of a move into Crimea. So we have to believe that that's a possibility for this same situation to happen in the Ukraine. And wheat at the moment is, of course, the driver. There's no question about that. When you look at the wheat situation, it's supported underneath, too, by the North African drought, really, really serious drought. And it looks like it's likely that we're going to see a lot of that come here to the U.S. for wheat. And so this whole big thing that we're currently dealing with is all speculation. You know, it's all everybody's anticipating this is what's going to happen, and nobody knows for sure. You know, and so as we go forward, we're going to complicate this next week because we've got the China lunar holiday coming in. We have continued weather in South America. You know, there's just so much, Todd, that is in the background that guys have to really stay on top of, because, you know, I'll read you a quote from our friend Mike McGlone from Bloomberg Intelligence. I think he really said it well. He said, it may not get much better for commodities than the roughly 90% advance in agricultural prices since the 2020 bottom. And that's something I really want to, you know, emphasize, a 90% advance since the 2020 bottom, which is part of the greatest inflation in 40 years and an emboldened Federal Reserve. Seasonal buoyancy and 100,000 Russian troops on the border of Ukraine may prove temporary and also may incentivize the North American production. And I mean, if prices aren't an incentive for North American production, I don't know what is. But, you know, so what that's a cautionary situation. And that's exactly how I feel. We have to make sure that we don't get so wrapped up in what our hopes are that we forget. I mean, hope's not a strategy. There's no two ways about it. And so we've got a lot of positive things. China okayed genetically modified grains due to their food security issues. You know, China normally doesn't buy during the lunar holiday unless prices go down, which, you know, we could definitely see. And when Informa came out today with their acreage, that was kind of interesting. They actually came out at 91.5 million corn acres, which is down 1.8 million from last year. Came in at soybeans at 87.8, which is only up 610,000 from last year, which I thought was very, wasn't a lot. Let's just put it that way. Winter wheat came in at 34.4 million acres. That was up about 750,000 acres. And so, you know, you looked at the summary on the planted acres with hay, was 314.9 million. That's approximately 382,000 more than last year. But if you take the hay out and you take the CRP out, it takes us down to 284 million, which is only 1.6 million above last year. But it is still 1.6 above. The interesting part is the CRP average. At 1.6 million acres up from last year is primarily in South Dakota, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and several of the other Western states. So this is going to make some, you know, this could lead to some very interesting acreage shifts in some of these states when we get into that March report.
Anything else that we need to take up? You haven't talked about Argentina yet.
No, we haven't talked about Argentina or Brazil. Argentina has actually had a little bit of a weather improvement. I don't think we can be misled by the idea that the early planted crops are going to really, really benefit from it. I think most of those losses are locked in already, but I think the best that we can hope for is maybe that it would stabilize down there if the weather pattern stays the same. It does seem like it's changing a little bit, so, you know, that's a good thing. When you look at Brazil, corn price in Brazil currently $7.80 a bushel American. Farmers in Brazil and Argentina both are still very slow forward contractors, and as we look at harvest going on, the yields in Mato Grosso are running 50 to 60 bushels to the acre. That's considered acceptable, but certainly not high as a lot of producers expected. And they represent 25% of the production. And then let's add to the fact that they've had heavy rains in some areas, which have really caused a lot of problems, and that they have that very unusual disease that we won't hear more about probably until later on. We did see some rain in Paraná, but unfortunately, most of it fell in the east, and the grain is produced in the west. So 16% of the total production comes out of Paraná. Rio Grande do Sul, oh, I can't imagine what it's like living there. They've had brutal temperatures and drought, and they're speculating that it's going to cause some producers to face losses bordering on 100%. Their temperatures have been in the range of 104 degrees for the last 2 weeks with very little rainfall, and they produce 16% of the beans. Mato Grosso do Sul, they've been averaging 44 to 55, and they have 8% of the production. Santa Catarina is very small, but they had very poor December-January weather, and they expect that they're going to see 43% less corn yields, 30% less bean yields, and the Safrinha corn planting in Brazil right now is at 5%. And it's kind of interesting because Mato Grosso is at 9.7%, which is about 3.5% ahead of normal, and Paraná is only at 2%, which is below normal. So they're having their issues. I can tell you that. I'm going to attend a seminar next week that comes out of Brazil. Actually, it comes out of South America, and we'll get a little bit better idea from that seminar as to. It'll be more up-to-date. It'll be very current is what it'll be. So I'm looking forward to that.
And we'll look forward to hearing about it when we talk with you again next week, too. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
Oh, you too. That's Jackie Vake. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Up next, we'll hear excerpts from an interview that fellow farm broadcaster Dustin Hoffman at the Iowa Agribusiness Network did last week with Anthony Fauci about Omicron and COVID-19. Dustin asked Dr. Fauci about wearing masks and what the effectiveness of cloth masks might be against Omicron.
You know, it's a gradation of effectiveness. If you look at the principle that the CDC says, it's better to wear any mask than not wear a mask at all. So some people say, well, I can't get a high quality mask, so I won't wear a mask. That's a mistake. Clearly, the N95s, if they're well fitted and they fit well and you get comfortable enough that you can wear it, is the best possibility. Next is a KN95 mask. Not yet as effective, but very, very effective. Then you work your way down to a surgical or double and triple ply mask, and then you get to a pure cotton mask. Each of them have some degree of effectiveness. The cotton masks, the cloth masks, may not work as well as an N95, but it's certainly better than no mask at all. So the advice is get your hands on a mask that's the highest quality, that fits well, and that you could tolerate wearing. You know, I wear a KN95. It fits me well. I could wear it for a long time, and it works well for me.
Now, we have a lot of farmers, when we talk about vaccines, they say, hey, I'm on the farm by myself a lot. I have very minimal exposure to the public. What kind of a message can we give to those people that say, hey, I'm not going to town that often. Why do I need to be vaccinated?
You know, particularly with Omicron, we're seeing people who even try very hard to avoid getting infected are getting infected. Now, if you're a healthy, strapping young farmer, the chances of your getting a serious outcome are very, very low. But what you might inadvertently do, innocently and inadvertently, is get infected. You may have no symptoms at all, or minimally symptomatic, and then accidentally, as it were, without even knowing it, spread it to someone you care for, an elderly parent or grandparent, or someone who has got an immune suppression due to cancer chemotherapy, or a child who has an immunodeficiency. Nobody would want to do that. I'm positive that no one would want to feel that they're spreading it to someone that's causing that person suffering and maybe severe disease. So there are a couple of reasons to get vaccinated, not only to protect yourself, because you can't guarantee that you're not going to get infected or you're not going to get a serious outcome, but also you want to be part of your communal and community responsibility to prevent the infection from spreading throughout your community.
Do you foresee us eventually getting to a place where the vaccine could be something similar to the flu, where you just go get your shot and you kind of can relax about it?
That is entirely conceivable. I'm not so sure we'll need to be vaccinated every year. I hope not. But if we have to, so be it. As long as it's protecting you, it's a much more effective vaccine than influenza vaccine. That I think people need to appreciate. The efficacy of this is 93, 94, 95% effective. So it's one of the most effective vaccines. Maybe it'll have to be every couple of years, or maybe it'll have to be every year. We don't know that right now. We just have to see how things play out.
Well, Dr. Fauci, I thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us here today.
Thank you very much for having me, Dustin. It's a pleasure to be with you.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Our thanks go to Dustin Hoffman, who is a member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. If you'd like to hear the full interview he did with Dr. Anthony Fauci, you can watch the YouTube video from our website at willag.org, willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast as we usually do on a Wednesday with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thank you so much for being with us. It's this time of year, about a month after we get through that shortest day of the year, that things start to feel pretty good for me. I hope that the extra light does the same for you.
Oh, absolutely. Not being able to go home with the sun still at least a light in the sky, I suppose, is a great thing. Absolutely.
It is indeed. In South America, however, they have much longer days at this point because, of course, they're in the middle of their spring/summer season now, beginning of the summer season, I suppose. Tell me about conditions which have improved in Argentina, but I think there are some areas in other nations, southern Brazil, Paraguay, that still might have some lingering drought.
Yes, absolutely. Certainly the past week of transition in Argentina has been nothing short of just fascinating, absolutely interesting, and beneficial, no matter how you look at it. A big part of the country was certainly extremely short on moisture before we got to this point last week, and then it started raining, and it's been really good. And the crop is continuing to improve. We're seeing the subsoil moisture starting to respond now, moving higher as we percolate that saturated topsoil moisture situation down into the subsoil. So that's looking good. But you're absolutely right. There is a part of South America that is still just being beat up every day. That is centered on Paraguay and northeastern Argentina, as well as neighboring areas of Mato Grosso do Sul and western Paraná and northern Rio Grande do Sul, all in Brazil, of course. And that pocket there is now about 13 days into a 100 to 110 degree temperature regime. That's a long time to be dealing with that kind of heat. And I may be exaggerating a little bit. I think there were a couple of days in there where there were some upper 90s, but it was still hot. And, in late December, there was also a 10-day period of similar heat. So over the past 6 weeks or so, about a month's worth of excessive heat has occurred. And so without any question, the bottom line is that these unirrigated areas in Paraguay in particular are just devastated. And if they get any kind of a yield out of any crop there, it's going to be absolutely amazing. Some of the fringe areas in Brazil and Argentina are certainly experiencing similar conditions. And on the Argentina side of the fence, though, it's mostly cotton that's produced near the Paraguay border. A little bit of minor grain and oil seeds are there as well. And then on the Brazil side of the fence, of course, there's a lot of soybeans and early season corn that's produced. And of course, we've seen big cuts in production because of this droughty area. Over the course of the next 10 days, we will see three little, and I put that in quotes, little rain events. So we will bring the temperatures down in Paraguay and these neighboring areas, and we'll offer scattered showers on three different occasions. But if you're looking for that drought to totally bust up, it's not going to happen, not during this 10-day period. Maybe a little bit later in February, and certainly in March, we'll see it break down. But it's not a very pretty picture. And, of course, I think there's been so much damage to the crops, probably won't make a whole lot of difference. There's been a lot of chatter here recently about how this is all going to impact the safrinha corn and cotton that are produced in Brazil. Well, most of that production region is actually far enough away from the Paraguay border that the majority of crops will probably do well. And we do expect the current La Nina to still be prevailing on into all of February and probably into March, even though it'll be weakening. That should be enough to perpetuate a favorable rainfall pattern. Now, that might not be real good news for soybean harvesting, but I think there is a real good outlook there for safrinha crops to have moisture all the way into March and probably beyond so that they can perform normally.
And very quickly, you mentioned soybean harvesting in those same areas where the safrinha corn crop will be planted right behind those beans. How's it going, and will they be able to continue to harvest?
Yeah, the harvest has gone relatively well up to this point, but we are going to push a lot of rain through a part of interior southern Brazil, in particular northern Paraná and São Paulo, as well as eastern and northern parts of Mato Grosso do Sul. And that area is poised to see persistent, frequent, heavy rains starting late this week and going into at least the first half of next week. And we may see 8 inches or more. And in fact, the European forecast model has suggested 10 to 12 inches, my goodness, in a part of that region. So if all of that rain occurs, and I think it will be rainy enough, that there will be a disruption to the harvest and some new worry about the quality of those unharvested beans.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good week.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.